Okay, here we are in our lovely downtown university office of Dr. Du Yao. And that's the formal name. So should I call you? So what should I call you? Dr. Du? Dr. Yao?
Yao is okay.
Call you Yao? Okay, she's sitting right here next to me. And I call her Doctor. And because she has a PhD degree in linguistics?
Right.
Right. And today we're going to have a short interview with Yao. And she's going to tell us about herself. And by the way, this is the Origin of Words podcast interview. And my name is Lewis Sandler. And let's begin with Yao. I feel funny. I feel like I should be calling you Dr. Du.
Wow.
All right. So tell me, let's start with, you're obviously from China, but could you tell us a little bit more where you're from and how did you end up at Zhangke Yuan, University of Chinese Academy of Science?
Okay. Hi, dear listeners. And hi, Louis.
Hello.
It's a really great honor to be on your show. Thanks for inviting me. I was born in Harbin, the capital city of Heilongjiang province. I grew up there and I spent my primary school and middle school years there. And after that, in the year 2005, I came to Beijing International Studies University to have my undergraduate study there. And after 4 years, I continued my study and eventually got my master degree and PhD degree in linguistics from Beijing Foreign Studies University. And after that, I got my first job. And now I'm working in the foreign language department in the University of Chinese Academy of Sciences.
Right. So, and I also was in Beihai, Beijing Foreign Studies University. So I think we were in different campuses.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the
east
and I was on the west.
Okay.
So how did you get involved in linguistics? It's kind of a specialized area.
Yeah, I have some special interest in language. I mean, not only Chinese, English, but all kinds of different languages. And in my PhD program, I'm particularly interested in cognitive linguistics.
Which
means cognitive linguistics is basically talking about what's going on in people's mind when they produce and understand words and sentences. And there are so many sub-areas in cognitive linguistics, and my particular interest lies in the metaphor study.
Metaphors?
Yeah, metaphors. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. Because
you are a rose. You are like a rose.
Mm-hmm. Traditionally, people treated metaphor as a rhetorical device, like you said just now. I took that as a compliment, by the way. But in the past 40 years, scholars began to realize that metaphor is not just a rhetorical device. It has a lot to do with our cognition. And cognitive linguists believe that our conceptual system is fundamentally metaphorical in nature. Conceptual system is invisible to us. So how could you prove your assumption or hypothesis right? So basically, my PhD dissertation is trying to do some research to add some evidence, the linguistic evidence, to justify that kind of assumption.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. And on a practical question, is how long was your PhD?
It took me 4 years.
And that's 4 years after your master's degree?
Yes.
And then from your PhD, did you find it easy or difficult to find a job?
It's not that easy. I tried different schools, and finally I'm so lucky that I could be admitted to this prestigious university.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now you work with undergraduate or... Oh, there's the phone. It's not my phone. It's someone else's phone. It's over there. Well, we are in an office, so I guess this happens. So you're now in this university and you're teaching what?
I'm now teaching several English courses for non-English major graduate and postgraduate students.
Uh-huh. And in terms of their English, how do you feel between the undergraduates and the graduate students? Can you feel or see any difference among their between their English levels?
In terms of their English levels, I think it has little to do with their educational level. Mm-hmm. It has more to do with their English proficiency themselves. Generally speaking, I think there are some very good students in terms of their English proficiency, but also there are some students whose English proficiency is relatively basic.
Right. So, and I know among foreign teachers, and I'm sure many Chinese teachers, we all think the classrooms are so quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And the students, even though their English level may be pretty good, they're not willing to come forward and contribute very much. At least, I guess maybe it depends on the teacher. So I'm just wondering, from your point of view, and as a new teacher, do you encounter this kind of problem or resistance, or what's your feeling about this kind of passive behavior?
I think this situation has a lot to do with our teaching tradition, because in most, I guess, primary or secondary school education, students they like to learn sometimes in a passive way. They like their teachers to tell them the information, the knowledge, and very few of them take more initiatives in learning. But I guess the biggest difference between college or university and their previous study is in college you are expected and supposed to be a more independent and autonomous learner. That means you should pose more questions, you could challenge the teachers, but very few students do that now.
Mm-hmm. I personally like it when they challenge me.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I like too, because I think teaching and learning facilitate each other.
Right.
If no children ask you questions, there's no room for you to improve yourself.
Exactly. Now, I understand here, I have some notes. I understand that you studied abroad or did some work abroad. Could you talk abroad, meaning outside of China? Because we're in China now. Could you talk a little bit about that? Where did you go? What did you study? What did you do?
Yeah. During my PhD program, I got an opportunity and I went to the University of California, Berkeley, as a visiting student researcher. And there I studied in the linguistic department and audited some classes, and also I did the majority of my research for my dissertation there. I did some interviews on the locals. Yeah.
And you mean for your PhD?
Yeah.
Like, can you give an example? What kind of an interview?
What kind of interview? Because my dissertation is mainly talking about the different cultural models of marriage.
Of marriage? Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So what did you ask them and what did they say? This is at Berkeley?
Yeah, Berkeley.
Okay.
I interviewed several couples about their the things in their marriage and things related to their marriage. And that is part of my data I like to collect from them.
So can you give a typical question?
Typical question, how do you usually deal with the quarrels you had with your partner? Things like that. Or are you, do you think sex plays a very important role in your marital life? Some of the questions are a little bit private questions, I should say. But to my surprise, I guess most of my interviewees are very helpful and they were willing to share their experience in their marriage with me.
So this is related to cognitive linguistics?
Yes.
Oh, okay. I'm sure it must be. So during your time, and how long were you at Berkeley?
1 year.
So during your time there, did you feel any culture shock, or could you talk a little bit about that, or the students between Berkeley and here?
Yeah, many, many culture shocks. Okay, I think the amount of reading is huge compared with what we had in the Chinese educational system. Generally, at the very beginning of a the lecture, I mean the course, the professor will give the students the weekly schedule, and on that schedule you could find the reading materials you are expected to read. For example, for week two, you are supposed to read chapter 1 to chapter 4 from this book, and chapter 2 from that book, things like that. So if you don't read those reading materials beforehand, it is difficult for you to follow the instructor, and then you have nothing, you have no idea to contribute in the seminar accompanied with the lecture. The lecture,
right.
Yes. So I experienced all those of frustrations at the very beginning, and gradually I kind of adapted myself to this kind of American teaching style.
So you were also required to follow the syllabus, just like the other students?
Yes.
You had to do all the reading and and did you participate in the discussions?
Yes.
Wow. Did you raise your hand and try to answer a question? Or?
Not at the beginning, but gradually,
gradually
I tried to get myself involved in their classroom. And looking back, I feel that that is quite beneficial for me.
Now, this podcast is somewhat limited in time. It's not like we can do 1 hour. So we're slowly, quickly running out of time. But I want to ask you, let me think, something about your family life. You are married, right?
Yes.
And you have a child. You want to talk a little bit about that very quickly? Where did you meet your husband and so on?
Yes, I... it's a long story. I could tell you that story for a whole day. But in simpler words, I met my husband from the internet dating website, right? And after some back and forth.
In China?
In China, and we wrote email to each other. And after about a week or so, we met each other in my country.
After 1 week?
Yeah, after 1 week.
Wow.
We met each other and we feel so good about each other.
After 1 week?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and we got married within 1 year, I guess.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, that's great. And now you have a...
I have a little baby girl who is only 1.5 years old, and now she's learning to speak, and I find her so cute.
You could do another research project on that, right?
I can.
Yeah, you get another.
Because I thought, because now I could observe her on a daily basis, and I can, because I'm always feel that the children's English learning, language learning ability is so incredible and amazing. How they could manage to learn a language so well and so quickly in a very short period of time. So I got that opportunity to observe her on a daily basis, and I found we could learn a lot from them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. and you can take that knowledge with your research about that and give it to us, us adult teachers.
Yeah.
We could certainly use it. Is there anything else you want to wrap this up with? And for example, advice for students, especially our undergraduates here and graduate students that will listen, about their study habits of studying, not just English, but all the subject. They seem to have a common problem, which is time management.
Mm-hmm.
They always say they're out of time, they don't have time for this, they go to bed so late, and then they kind of come to class half asleep. Any advice for those kind of students? Or any students about studying?
Yeah, I personally have some teaching beliefs, and I'm always trying to put my teaching beliefs in my actual classroom. One of them is, I guess English learning or any foreign language learning is not an end, it's a means. That's my first point. You should really try to apply what you have learned in the classroom into the actual world, into the real world. That's my first point. The second point is English is a tool, but it is more than a tool. When we say it is a tool, I mean it is something, maybe it is English can help you communicate with more people, can give you a better job or get your paper published in an international journal. But what is the more than a tool part? I have no answer for that, but I can quote one sentence from the former South African president, Nelson Mandela, and I'd like to share the sentence with our listeners. That is, if you talk to someone in the language he understands, that goes to his head. But if you talk to someone in his own language, that goes to his heart. And I think it's true.
Yes, and that's a very good way to end this short conversation.
Yeah.
So I want to thank, I'll call you Dr. Du. I want to thank you very much for doing this. You're very lovely and gracious to do this.
Thank you.
On this hot summer's day. So, and if any listeners want to write in, you can send me an email at chinalewis@yahoo.com. And if you're on Facebook, of course you can make a comment, but I think most of you are not. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
So, bye-bye. Oh, we can say in Chinese.
Yeah, 再见.
再见.